SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Welcome in, everyone, to the Early Line, live right here on Sports Grid on a Friday morning on St. Patrick's Day. Happy St. Patrick's Day to everybody out there. Got the green going, little shamrock holding it down here underneath. It's Kevin Walsh, it's Donnie Wrightside with you over the next 2 hours. The brackets are underway. DRS, how you feeling?
Feeling good today, and it's always nice to know that, you know, we do have an Irish guy here on the set, that being me, Kevin Walsh. You can learn a lot from me. Big holiday today. You've always poo-pooed this day. I'm not going to allow it. Let's have a great St. Patrick's Day and get after it.
I'm sorry, is the last name Wrightside, is that Irish? Is that Irish heritage,
yes,
Wrightside?
Look, it's a stage name for me. It's actually O Wrightside, so get it together here. Pure Irish over here.
You drop the O so you can fit in, get a job in this business.
Exactly.
You're being held down. I see where you're at.
All right,
here we go. Look, let's get after it with some of the biggest results yesterday from the opening day of the NCAA tournament. Princeton stun Arizona. The Wildcats within the Pac-12 conference tournament, one of the best teams in college basketball all season long. But this is a 59-55 victory for the Jersey boys as the 15 seed knocks off the number two in the South region.
Baffling is the only words I can find in this game. Arizona was an absolute machine, Kevin, on offense all season long, and complete mismatches all over the court against Princeton. What did they do with that? 24 points in the second half, including a dismal final 7 minutes of that game. Princeton won, and if you were to watch for the first time in a tournament and had no idea what was going on, you go, yeah, Princeton's a really good team. I don't, Arizona probably stinks. They just sneak in the tournament. Horrible performance by Arizona.
To your point, getting it done with defense. The total of this game was 154. The game finished with 114 points, 40 points south of the number. We will talk about the ramifications of that game. We also saw a lot of these one seeds in action yesterday. Houston, unimpressive, in a 63-52 victory over Northern Kentucky. Marcus Sasser also, maybe the main story here, as he looks like he might have re-injured his groin injury. Finished this game with 5 points, just 14 minutes of action, missed the entirety of the second half.
Kevin, here's what we talked about. And again, they're going to be precautionary here. We didn't think they would even need him to beat Northern Kentucky. It was a lot closer than what we thought. But if you remember, we were talking about, it wasn't him getting to the tournament and being ready to play. Those soft tissue injuries, you can re-injure at any moment. And again, we're not talking about an offensive guard in football. You're talking about a guard in basketball. You have to go the length of the court time and time again, run miles out there. This is something to certainly watch.
How about yesterday, Furman, with an absolutely incredible finish against Virginia? This is one of those upsets you see coming and then still absolutely stunned when you watch it play out. The Virginia Cavaliers are just, this is an unimaginable basketball team. In their last four tournament appearances, I believe they've been eliminated in the opening round three times. The other time, they won the national championship, 68-67. The Paladins get it done.
Unbelievable loss here, but you're right. These are the teams that, for me, I root for to get knocked out. Yesterday on Twitter, I had two dogs. One of those dogs I gave out was Furman at +6, based on the fact that they could make the three-point shot. First half, I'm going, that's a miscap here. They're getting the three-point shots, just not knocking them down. Tremendous performance to hang around. And then, even when you're down in the final few minutes of the game, make clutch shots, make clutch plays. Unbelievable. This is what the tournament is all about.
Absolutely so. And then,
fun.
Truthfully, the biggest stunner of the day, Brandon Miller scored 0 points for Alabama. Oh, and by the way, they scored 96 in the basketball game. The radio audience is here on a Friday morning, St. Patrick's Day, the Early Line, Sirius XM, channel 159. Brandon Miller scored 0. The Crimson Tide scored 96. They didn't cover, though. A&M Corpus Christi at the literal buzzer snags this cover away from me and many others here, though eliminated in this 16-1 matchup.
If I had the crystal ball, Kevin, you know me. I took yesterday a team total over for Alabama, which they had to get 90 points to cash that. And if you would have told me one of the best players in the nation and the best player on their team did not score, I might have thought they got upset in that basketball game. But how about that? 96 points. Come on, Bama. Let's roll.
Certainly so. In news outside of college basketball yesterday, Adam Schefter of ESPN reporting The Carolina Panthers are interested in Bryce Young, which is a bit surprising because they missed a lot of these moves here for the Panthers moving up to the number one pick. We've heard about C.J. Stroud. And the odds, Donnie, I don't know if everybody was busy betting college basketball. Well, the odds are still saying it's C.J. Stroud at minus 220.
I mean, is this a smokescreen? Is this not a smokescreen? Because you trade up to the number one spot and you figure, like, we have our guy. We can't lose him. And as soon as you trade to the number one spot, you say to everybody, you know what? We don't even know who we like at this point. We just thought it would be pretty fun to be in the top spot of this, and we might trade back. Don't believe what you hear at this time of the year.
It is a really, really interesting thing to break down, and that is exactly what we will do at some point here in our opening hour. A bit of baseball news. We mentioned this yesterday, and we told you we were waiting for the official word, and it was the worst here. For superstar closer Edwin Diaz of the New York Mets, his season is already over, injured in a celebration at the World Baseball Classic. It's one thing to be injured at an event like this. Injured in celebration, just an awful, awful thing to see here.
Yeah, and for him, lucky that he just signed a monster contract. Bad for the Mets. Why? When Diaz came in the ballgame, it was a wrap. He is that good a player. Mm-hmm. This is certainly going to factor in for the Mets season. No doubt about it, Kevin.
Lastly, Michael Jordan looking to sell his stake. The Charlotte Hornets, Donnie.
LeBron would never. I think we can leave it at that.
LeBron might buy that stake, man. Take it off of his hands and try and help him out a little bit. Let's keep things moving here. It's the Early Line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24-7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Back right here on the Early Line, we take a look at what was the biggest result on day number one of the tournament. And this is not a debate segment where I'm going to say, Don, you know, this game was more of an impact than this game here. But we've each kind of highlighted two games that we think could have massive ramifications moving forward. And the game that Don is going to talk about, I know is big, and I know Donnie will agree here, that Arizona losing outright to Princeton, it's just an absolutely massive result. And there's so many directions that you can take this, and you can talk about what this means for the South region. But before you do that, Arizona being a number two seed and losing to Princeton is a stunner, an absolute stunner. But Arizona's program is becoming a little off, you know, too familiar with losing early in this tournament. The DeAndre Ayton team comes to mind, and that loss in the opening round to Buffalo here. 15 seeds knocking off two seeds is becoming a little more familiar in this tournament. But you still, when you are that two seed that loses that game, it doesn't make it any easier. This is a team that won the Pac-12 tournament. This is a team that was top 10 in college basketball, what felt like start to finish. And Tommy Lloyd's done a nice job there. But these can't be the results if you're the Arizona Wildcats. That was an Arizona team last year. With lottery talent like Benedict Mathurin leading the way, that probably should have done more than they ultimately did in last year's tournament, Donnie. This was a nightmare of a result for Arizona, who some felt got a favorable draw in that South region, especially in the bottom portion of the bracket. A true mess for the Wildcats.
An absolute mess for the Wildcats. Kevin talked about it yesterday on the show. I said, boy, you know what? One team I'm not really talking about all that much, and I feel like they're getting a little bit disrespected because they're in the Pac-12. They're ultra-talented and can make a deep run because of how this tournament sets up. It was the Arizona Wildcats, because you were looking at those first-round games going, hey, some team's got a little bit of a tougher matchup. They should walk right over Princeton. Now, we know Princeton won the Ivy League. They play a different brand of basketball. I get all that. But when you're better at every single position, you're supposed to run away. And, Kevin, this wasn't, hey, look at that. 15 seed, only getting 3.5 points from a number two seed. It wasn't that. Arizona should have run away with this game. And also, I don't even know how this works. Honestly, Kevin, before the game again, let me in on some information. Hey, Donnie, by the way, Princeton's going to make 3 free throws for the game and shoot 4 of 25 from the 3-point line. I would have told you Arizona 75, Princeton 35. 59-55 final. Sometimes you take a look at the numbers and they just don't make sense, but also tells you that's how bad Arizona was. It looked like at points in the second half that they were going to start to go in on cruise control, get a double-digit lead, and just salt away the Princeton Tigers. And then if everybody, which the nation was, which is what I love, you have multiple games on at one time, you see the upset that's about to happen or a close game, everybody turns it on. So I don't think anybody watching college basketball yesterday didn't tune into the final 5 minutes and go, if I haven't watched Arizona all that much, I don't understand what I'm watching. You had guys just taking dribble drives repeatedly into double teams and getting blocked. Princeton was blocking your shots here in this game. You had mismatches of absolute monsters on the low block you couldn't get the basketball to. I have no idea what Arizona did over the final 5 minutes, but 59-55, that was as an embarrassing a performance as you can get for a team that a lot of people thought could go a long way.
Yeah, certainly. Six blocks for Princeton compared to Arizona's one in this game. Where this game has a massive impact and why I think it would be, you know, if we were to debate the biggest result of the day, is what this does to the odds in the South region. And I think both you and I yesterday have a couple of tickets out there that I'll tell you, I know for me, I was excited about this result. I know that this is good for me long term, as I'm someone that's bet Baylor to win the South region. God, Baylor was 6-1. To in the South region before we tipped off yesterday. That number's down to plus 310. Baylor's not even played a game yet. It's hard to move that much when you've not even played a game yet. Baylor, the second option on the board. That is a massive boost as somebody who thought that the Baylor Bears' most difficult matchup, that's not a slight to Alabama, but I thought the way Arizona profiled, I thought they would be the most difficult matchup for the Baylor Bears in the South region. They don't even have to play them now if Baylor is able to march on. But this is also great for your ticket on Alabama to win a national championship. Yeah. A number that's come down 5-1, knocking on the door of being the favorites for this entire tournament. And that's what happens when the number two seed in your region gets eliminated here. You talk about winners and losers of yesterday. Alabama and Baylor absolutely fit that description.
Yes, and also Virginia going down. Not to say Virginia was going to factor into an Elite Eight or a Final Four run, but still a top five seed in that region drops. This is what's so much fun about taking, you know, flyers in the tournament. Again, I'm not taking necessarily a flyer on Alabama, but it's not as if the price is plus 110 for them to win a national championship. They came in at 8-1 here, and after one day and one victory over a bad, I can't say a bad basketball team, Texas A&M, an overmatched Texas A&M against them. Look at the odds drop. You don't get this in the regular season, Kevin. In December, a big win over North Carolina. Your odds don't even change at all because we know the big meat of your schedule is coming up and then obviously in the conference tournaments and March Madness. That's what's so much fun to take futures because every future I had, whether the team played or didn't play, when other favorites gets knocked off, you get that CLV in your back pocket. Everything looks great right now, but that is a fantastic result because, again, me preface this by saying yesterday, boy, the one team I'm really worried about in this region is Arizona because they have the tools to beat you on the court, the mismatches that would be available, a very good offense. They got knocked out by Princeton. And right, you take a look at the South region, everything now just opens up even wider for the other teams.
Absolutely. So tell me, Donnie, what was the result on the board yesterday that really stood out to you amongst the rest?
To be honest with you, most of you say, oh, it should have been Virginia and Furman. Not necessarily at this point, because I thought the lightning rod game overall, Kevin, was Duke Oral Roberts. Didn't it feel like when the brackets were announced, there were two polar opposites in this? The one, I guess, you know, polar opposite talking about, well, Duke is underseeded. They were sensational to end the year. They are healthy now. And then you'd argue against it and say, okay, well, the ACC was down and Duke better watch out here because it's a 5-12 wrap up. And also the team, they got Oral Roberts. Been there, done that, superstar player and A. Smith. Watch out. They could get knocked around one. And even going over this game, I told you, Kevin, it felt like one of those where you wouldn't be surprised if Duke actually made it to the Elite Eight or the Final Four. And equally as surprised, or not surprised, I should say, if Duke got knocked off by Oral Roberts. They were awesome. Right out of the gate, Kevin, 15-0. Duke really stamped this out, which didn't even give you hope, which is that's what you're looking for from an underdog looking to make a big-time upset. Keep them in the game at the half. When it's late in the game, like Princeton, Arizona, they're now believing they can actually beat you. Duke stomped them right out here. That was a massive win for the Duke Blue Devils. Not because I actually thought they would get beat by Oral Roberts. I didn't. But that was one of those games where everybody goes, if you're going to pick an upset, where are you headed? Duke Oral Roberts, 5-12.
You know, you mentioned 15-0 start. The nothing held for the opening 8 minutes of this game. That's how long it took Oral Roberts to find the bottom of the net. You could tell Max Asemus was going to be in for a very, very long day. He only scored 4 points in the second half. He only scored 12 points for this entire game. Duke's calling card is the defensive side of the basketball, and we saw that check in this game. Many people believe that Duke is the most dangerous group maybe in the entirety of that East region. We'll see if that plays out. The one thing that did not break their way, and I know plenty of people are ready to fade Tennessee, but if you were to ask any honest Duke fan, would you rather play Tennessee or Louisiana, you'd take the 13 seed. The Vols did advance yesterday, even if it was in uglier fashion in that game against the Ragin' Cajuns. We've still not seen Purdue or Marquette take the floor yet in this East region. They're both in action today. But these are just two of 16 games from yesterday's slate that stood out. And I want to run through all of these because not all of them. Sorry, Boise State, Northwestern, but we're not going to break that one down in its entirety. But there are a couple of other games from yesterday's slate that stood out, specifically on that one line, which isn't always the case. Sometimes the one line results are pretty straightforward. Yeah, they beat up on a team that we didn't know until the tournament started and we'll never hear from again. But both Alabama and we, of course, saw Houston offer up some things that caught the eye. We break that down in the rest of day one after this break.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Take a look at the rest of day number one, as there were a couple of interesting results on this board. But maybe the other game that, you know, we could have easily just talked about was Houston and Northern Kentucky. The Cougars against the Norse is hardly the type of game that you think would be incredibly newsworthy, right? Unless Houston loses outright, there's not much to think about here. Because a competitive game is, that happens, right? Houston was an 18.5-point favorite. They won the game by 11. Let's not go crazy. Well, it's not that simple. Houston and their best player now come with a number of question marks for a lot of people. Marcus Sasser's groin injury that kept him out of their conference tournament championship game, a game that they ultimately lost, had seemingly returned to the table, as Sasser was only able to play in the first half of this basketball game, just 14 minutes. And he obviously was not very effective in those 14 minutes, only scoring 5 points. We apparently have now heard from Kelvin Sampson that he's also worried about Jamal Sheed's knee injury, which is the last thing you need when you're already maybe going to be down a guard in Marcus Sasser. And oh, by the way, their next round game is against Auburn, and that game is in Alabama. And if you didn't know, Auburn is in Alabama. It's very good seating by the committee. Houston, though, Donnie, now is the number one seed in this region, has a lot of people asking, are they okay? Are they on full upset alert in their next round against Auburn? It's an early read for me, admittedly. I've not cracked into numbers, but I've seen this movie before. And Houston in their next game against Auburn, they probably win by 15 to 20 points because I think they are that good. And I don't think the Auburn Tigers are that good. I think Houston is just fine, but maybe you don't agree and think that there is some worry around the Houston Cougars.
As a Texas backer out of the region here with a chance to cut down the nets for a national championship, I love this news. And again, it's not cheering on injuries. It's just when you have a wager, now you're saying, okay, what's the one downfall that Houston had coming into the tournament? It's if Sasser wasn't right all the way through, they're certainly not going to be as good as we think they can be on the top end of it. A worst case scenario yesterday is you get a re-injured player where you don't know if he's going to play in the next game here. And then you get another superstar player injured at the same time, or should we say, questionable, and we're worried a little about those health injuries as opposed to when we entered into the tournament. So now if you're going to have two guys limping out of there in the starting lineup, it's never good. But also, the interesting part about this, Kevin, is we had Houston coming into the tournament as a 5-1. Yes, they won, so you figure their odds are going to decrease. But you didn't figure the betting markets would appreciate that. Maybe two stars would be down. They're now plus 470, so their odds still going lower and lower. But I got to say, I'm nervous because this isn't the regular season, Kevin. We talk about in the NBA, like, oh, my goodness, LeBron James is going to miss a couple weeks. Well, they have a couple weeks left in their season. And if they lose a game, they're not knocked out of the NBA playoffs. They have a couple more games to get ready and a couple more weeks to get healthy. When you look at the NCAA tournament with Houston, there is no tomorrow, as we like to say, if you lose. The season is over. You don't play, Kevin, on a Thursday and then reappear next Thursday like it's a football game. And you have 6 days to get ready and get healthy for it. You are going to take the court rapidly against an Auburn team that's coming on red hot here after knocking off Iowa. And they also, they're human beings on Auburn, Kevin. They're kids. You know what they say? We have a number one seed that's wounded out there. Let's get after it. Let's get excited. This is exactly what we hoped for. Now we can advance past a one seed. Not to say they can do it, but you're just feeding into the narrative now where Auburn is now licking their chops to play Houston as opposed to going, okay, we beat Iowa, but here comes the real test. This is not a good scenario for Houston. For my bracket, Kevin, I wish I could go in and change it right now because I don't like what I'm hearing from Houston.
It's not good news. I still just think they're so talented that they'll be fine against Auburn. But also, maybe I'm being wildly optimistic on a team that could be down two starters heading into a basketball game. Early lines are out for that. They're a 6.5-point favorite. Then let's get to the Alabama game. Alabama wins by 21 against Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They were up by 20 at the break. The cover was a disaster. They should Now, here's the thing. The kid hits the three with at the buzzer. That's a tough beat, right? That's March Madness. That's the whole thing. The issue that I have is when you lay 23.5 with the number one overall seed in college basketball, and they're up 20 at the half, you'd like to think that it's not going to come down to the final possession, but it did. But none of that is the headline here. Brandon Miller scored 0 points. Now, you can go one of two ways. You can go, what's wrong with Brandon Miller? Or, yeah, see, look how good this team is. This isn't just the Brandon Miller show. I'm a little bit on the what's wrong with Brandon Miller's side, though, Donnie? Because apparently he's also injured. I don't know what happened to all the best players in college basketball. Apparently we could not make it through the final 2 weeks of the regular season, but he might have a groin injury or something of the nature that could have hampered Brandon Miller and only allowed him to play for 19 minutes. You know, I'm offering some positivity around Houston. Maybe that's silly here. I don't feel like anybody's paying any attention, though, to the Brandon Miller stuff because Alabama still won in dominant fashion. But if Brandon Miller's legitimately injured, Alabama's not going to be long for this tournament.
Yeah, you can't take a look at this game because, granted, you're looking at the best team in the country overall for me with the Alabama Crimson Tide, one of the most talented teams out there. They do everything. And we've said it ad nauseum throughout the season. Great offense, great defense, can make the three-point shot. And you're supposed to beat a Texas A&M Corpus Christi even without your best player. Let's say Miller didn't even play. They probably still probably win that game by 20 points. But you know what I feel better with? 96-75 with Brandon Miller with 36 points, knowing that your ace is humming in the tournament and he's ready to put people on red alert. I don't take this as, hey, man, even better. Look how deep they are. No. You need your superstars to play well all throughout the tournament to win a championship. You can't have Miller go, yeah, you know, I'm going to take a back seat in the tournament here. Not feeling all that up to it. My groin's a little bit sore, but we're good enough to power through. I'll score 8 points a game. You're not winning a national championship, quite frankly. You're not even going to get to the Elite Eight if that's going to be the possibility here. I am a little bit worried about the Alabama Crimson Tide, but you're right. People are going to just look at that final score and be like, huh, that's interesting. Their best player didn't score a point, and they still dropped 96. I'm not that worried. I would much rather have that 96-75 with my superstar player going off to start the tournament.
Yeah, that would have I've been able to set the tempo a little bit. Bright Brandon Miller going wild. Again, it's good to see that it's like, man, we need a Brandon Miller to beat A&M Corpus Christi.
Yeah.
But if the reason he scored 0 points. He was minus 3,500 to hit 1-3. Like, you want to talk about upsets? The least likeliest thing that could have possibly happened in this entire tournament from now until this is over just happened. And that was Brandon Miller getting shut out by a 16 seed. That was that. Yeah. The other one seed that was in action was Kansas. Look, this is a, what do you want me to say? Howard covered for basically the entirety of this basketball game, and then they didn't. Howard looked like they might win the first half outright, and then did not cover in the first half either. They gave up 96 points to the Jayhawks here. Kansas's entire starting lineup was in double digits. It was impressive, but it's
when things start to translate to, yeah, they played Howard. We'll see what the next round brings. If I can mention this quickly, though, Donnie, because those odds are out. People have talked a lot about Kansas and Arkansas. Kansas is a 3.5-point favorite in their next round game. 1 versus 8, just a 3.5-point line. People clearly giving a lot of early love to the Arkansas Razorbacks in that game.
Yeah, rightfully so. No. And it's probably going to be a tough game. But also, let's keep in mind, Kevin, when we entered into the tournament, what were we saying? Kansas is going to get Bill Self back. Everything's going to be fine. Didn't see Bill Self on the sideline. Not sure if he's even going to coach in the next game. And again, that is massive. When you start to play better, you're supposed to beat Howard. You can beat Howard with the student manager as the actual coach for the game here, right? But as you move forward in those timeouts, in those big moments, should I sub this guy in? Should I take this guy out? What play to call up in a timeout? When to call a timeout? Late game strategy on what to do? That's what Bill Self does. You need him involved in those situations. But also, Kevin, side note in this game, Grady Dick, 19 points, 11 rebounds, and 3 assists. I talked about it before this tournament started. At the FanDuel Sportsbook, we actually don't have the props up here for MOP of the tournament, which is most outstanding player. He was a 60-1, and I got to say, that was a good start for Grady Dick here if you're looking to win with Kansas and also cash a big ticket on maybe the player of the tournament.
Yeah, certainly a hot start for him. If we can, though, Furman, Virginia. I college basketball also is not really built for hot takes, Donnie. Here's what I know. If this was the kind of game that was going to be talked about in the hot take arena, the shows would be opening up tomorrow with Tony Bennett needs to be fired.
He does.
And I know it's a hot take, but also, I mean, they should maybe think about it. I mean, I know we won a national championship, Donnie, but every other result is getting eliminated in round one in embarrassing fashion because they can't score the basketball. Is it a recruiting issue? Is it a coaching issue? What is the problem here? I mean, Virginia should not be losing 4-13 games, and people would be more surprised if Virginia won the basketball game. A couple of years ago, they played Ohio, and everyone's like, well, they're obviously going to be dead to rights. Obviously going to be dead to rights. And they were. And then they show up here against Furman, and people are like, oh, Furman's going to crush this team. And Furman wins. It shouldn't be this easy to predict a 13 seed beating a 4.
This is crazy because he won a national championship, and that's the ultimate barometer here. So his style technically does work. If he never did that, it would be a different story, but he did get it, Kevin. But equate it to any other sport out here. If you are the better basketball team, you are a high major here going against Furman, you would figure, and I'm just going to say 100 possessions in a basketball game, your talent's going to win out there. But if you limit it to 40 possessions in a basketball game, that leaves so much less margin for error. It's why we love Alabama. They're going to push tempo and play great on both ends. So if you get a ton of possessions, you go, Alabama eventually is going to win out. Why? Because the game has many, many more opportunities for Alabama to pull ahead. Virginia does it to themselves. You play a slowdown motion. Again, a blowout for Virginia is 9 points. Think about that. They got beat outright by Furman. That's just the way it happens with that tempo.
Absolutely magical. We'll pause college basketball for a bit. I want to sneak the NFL in here on a Friday. It's the early line.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Get right after here on the NFL side of things. The NFL draft is not all too far away. And there was a report yesterday that I had to read once, twice, three times, watch the video again, do some research, watch the video again, read the tweet again. I don't really know what's going on. Yesterday, Adam Schefter on NFL Live, of course, Adam Schefter of ESPN, said that he believes that the favorite to go number one overall to the Carolina Panthers is Bryce Young. Now, usually, anything like that locks every odd imaginable, and when they reappear, things change drastically. C.J. Stroud right now sits at minus 220. Bryce Young sits at plus 250. Under normal circumstances, Bryce Young would be minus 220. C.J. Stroud would be plus 250. Because that's what happens when the number one NFL reporter in the world tells you that the favorite to go number one overall is Bryce Young. And incredibly here, people have said, yeah, no, well, not really. Now, maybe that is because, as Schefter went on to explain, and this was, by the way, and I, because I don't know if it's because this wasn't a tweet from Adam Schefter, but a clip from that involved Adam Schefter as to why this didn't get picked up the same way. But Schefter did go on to say that he believes at least that the Panthers have entered this process of having the number one pick interested in Bryce Young, but maybe things can trade, can change rather, excuse me. So again, it's not as concrete as perhaps the, you know, big breaking banner tweets that he sends out when a hot name like Alan Lazard might go to the New York Jets. But am I alone in this, Donnie? Are you not surprised that Adam Schefter just said that Bryce Young is the favorite to go number one overall and the odds don't even slightly reflect that?
Yeah, it is. And I don't know if it's just because everybody's paying attention here to the college basketball tournament or other things, but usually doesn't care from a, you know, bookmaker's perspective, like the FanDuel Sportsbook, because you're reacting on information that you hear. Tweet, no tweet, whatever. They hear something behind the scenes, they're going to shift those odds. And the simple fact that a national, a prominent guy, not just a random beat writer, a guy you got to click on his profile to see if the check mark is real, who said something here and you don't want to believe it, that's big information that comes out. But also, are we way past this game? Because the reason I say this is if the Carolina Panthers, Kevin, traded up to the number one spot, and again, we are watching college basketball down Atlantic City when it happened. Ooh, that's an interesting move right there. If they came out and go, we found our guy, we're not going to tell you who it is, but we know exactly. Word would start to filter out that it would be either CJ Stroud, Bryce Young, Anthony Richardson, whoever. But the fact of the matter is, Kevin, it almost felt like the minute they traded for it, they go, oh, by the way, we just wanted to get up to the top spot and then start evaluating quarterbacks here. So now it's all smoke screens coming out, which maybe gamblers and bookmakers alike are saying, we're not going to react on information daily on this because it is a volatile market. But the simple fact is the Carolina Panthers already told us we really don't know who we actually want. We're still evaluating. And also the chance of us trading back is legitimate. So if you are a smart franchise like the Panthers, if you made the move up top just to create doubt in other teams, they might call you up and go, oh, my goodness, we want Bryce Young worse than ever. Oh, look at this. Mm-hmm. We'll trade back one spot or two spots, improve on our draft capital that we gave up, and still get the quarterback that we want. You can't believe that. And you should, what I should say is you can't believe what these teams are talking about behind the scenes. And typically, the odds makers are the first to know. And if they're not going to believe an Adam Schefter report immediately here, maybe they're buying into, no, 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 Carolina, you're not getting away with this.
And again, let me just say this, and I know this might sound silly to people that don't run through, like, you know, the newsbreaker alerts on their phones through Twitter, or, you know, I know you have it set up on TweetDeck yeah. like this, but yep. there yep. is a genuine difference when Adam Schefter tweets Bryce Young is the favorite to go number one overall, and an ESPN NFL Live account, quote, you know, yeah. just sends out a video of Adam Schefter talking on the show. One, the Adam Schefter tweet holds a lot more weight. However, to dissect what you just said, because it was going to be something that I was thinking about, becoming my takeaway here is, I don't think the Panthers are lying when they say they're interested in trading the first overall pick, which is incredible to me. You know, so a couple of years back, right, at this point now, what, 6-7 years ago, Donnie, when the Rams traded up to number one overall to draft Jared Goff about a month out, they didn't do that and then jump on the phones and start trading and seeing what people wanted, right? When we saw the New York Jets trade up to number three overall, right, the Browns were picking at one. We knew they were looking quarterback. The Giants were sat there at two. They were not looking quarterback, but teams could potentially be getting there. But the Jets were like, we are here to draft whichever quarterback comes to us. No one needs to call us. That wouldn't make any sense. So the Panthers trading up to one and then being active on the phone lines would buck trends. That's not what history tells us, but I genuinely believe that Carolina is hot on the phones right now, looking and willing to trade the first overall pick.
Sign of a dumb franchise, to be honest with you, Kevin. I mean, if you're going to give all that draft capital to go to one, you better know what you're getting. And how do you, like, David Tepper, the owner, like, he sits back and goes, all right, we're going to one. This is exciting. I'm going to sell it to my fan base. Hey, Frank, who are you looking at? By the way, we're just starting the evaluation process. Now, let me get this straight. You gave up all this draft capital where you might have gotten the same guy where you stood pat, and you're going to end up losing if you trade back out of it, and there's a chance of that. That's ridiculous here. I don't want to buy what the Carolina Panthers are actually selling. You didn't make a move by giving up a second round draft pick to move up and get this spot. You gave up a ton, which means you are sold on the guy you're drafting, and you want to make sure, Kevin, that nobody else can draft this guy. I don't want to believe what Carolina has, because the fact of the matter is, it is often, hey, we're going to work out this deal over a three-day period, make the move, and then go, you know what? I don't know if that was a good move. Should we look at trading back? The Carolina Panthers and Frank Reich should know exactly who they're taking right now, Kevin. Otherwise, fire everybody and start over again.
And I think that's the fact that they should know who they're drafting is fair. But just to be clear here, do you agree that they do not currently in that room know who they are drafting? Do you agree that they are active on these lines, willing to trade this pick?
I wonder, because again, I'm just following the timeline. I can't believe that an organization that, again, are football professionals would trade up, and the minute they did go, oh my God, I just saw a video of Anthony Richardson. We got to completely change it around and see if we can get out of this pick. I don't think so. Maybe it's just one of those, Kevin, where they say, okay, we're drafting in a position right now, unless we trade up, we're not going to get C.J. Stroud or Bryce Young. We have it at 50-50. But the one thing we know is if we stay put here, we're not going to get our guy. If we trade up, Kevin, to number two overall, we might not get our guy. So I think that's what they're settling on. And maybe if they hear and they keep it quiet in the building where they're really sold on Bryce Young, let's say that is the fact. When somebody picks up the phone and goes, we don't know who you're picking, but we want C.J. Stroud, would you change one pick by sliding it down, get your capital back, you still get your guy, everybody's happy? That's a dream scenario. But don't think in the slightest that the Carolina Panthers traded up and go, well, this is one of five guys we can take. We just wanted to make sure we got him. No, it can only come down to, Kevin, a 50-50 split on Young and Stroud, and then they'll make the decision from there. And if somebody bowls them over and says, look, we guarantee you we're going to take Stroud when you want Bryce Young, slide back to two with us here, something like that.
I just, it is stunning, but there's no benefit to getting up to one overall and being this indecisive, right?
Correct.
There's no positives to that. Now, this, again, something that you've always talked about is kind of when the owners force his hands. Like maybe maybe they have the first overall pick right now because Tepper said, listen, by any means necessary, you get up to one. And Frank Reich's like, all right, whatever, we'll figure out which guy we like. We'll see which one it is. But again, what's interesting is, and this is why, if C.J. Stroud and Bryce Young were minus 110 right now, this would be a much shorter segment probably for you and I. We'd be breaking down Mariota and Minshew landing spots already here. Ooh, you know what I'm saying? And I know you're chomping at the bit to talk about those things. Look, I'm just saying, the fact that it's still C.J. Strong at minus 220, C.J., he's still strongly booked. I didn't mess his name up there, but I knew how that was going to get turned around.
That's
it's the fact
one.
That it is still CJ booked strongly at minus 220. Go ahead.
K-Dub, if you would have let that roll on, like the Panthers are so confused, it's CJ. I mean, that would have been one of the – I would have had to say, you know what, kid's got it. He doesn't need my help anymore. That would have been good. Play that one out next
time. CJ Strong and Bryce Youth just taking a look at these quarterbacks here and trying to see who jumps off of the page. So this is – and again, the draft starts at one. So when are we going to get, we're still a ways out, but number two overall pick, number three overall pick, this stuff all starts to trickle down. In not other NFL news, in other Carolina news, the Charlotte Hornets, Michael Jordan is looking to sell his portion of the franchise. I just wanted to mention this quickly because whenever anyone's looking to sell, it is a little noteworthy. When one of the greatest players in the history of the NBA, who just happens to be an owner, is looking to sell, it's not great, right? Like I feel like if you're the NBA, you'd rather this not play out this way.
Oh yeah,
Donnie.
Yeah.
Wouldn't you much rather? Like I don't know if there's a way that they can incentivize Michael Jordan to stay on as the owner of the Charlotte Hornets, but they really should.
No, and you're right. Let's take a look at a different way to approach this, Kevin, too, because the NBA and also the NFL, the NHL, Major League Baseball, what are they always looking for? A very standout minority owner. Michael Jordan's the perfect one. LeBron James, he's already angling for a franchise in Las Vegas. But also, you're looking at basically the face of the game for the past 50 years in the NBA is Michael Jordan. Now, the fact that it hasn't worked out, I want to say, on the court, monetarily, it's fantastic. Guy buys in for like $180 million, going to turn it into well over $1 billion. Business-wise, it makes some sense. But also, like Michael Jordan, I could make the jokes like, hey, man, he probably bet a lot on Carolina basketball this year, and that's why he's the sell the team, because of how much he likes to gamble and how much he lost. That's not the case here. Michael Jordan prints money, probably makes millions of dollars every single day in his life. It's interesting that he's selling because it is a small fraternity of owners, and it's cachet to own an NBA team. If you want to say the one thing that Michael Jordan has failed on, it's not business. The unbelievable business of buying Charlotte, them stinking for how long he's owned the team, and selling them for 10 times the amount or more for what he bought him for. That's a tremendous business move. I am kind of shocked that he's doing that because he's not in day-to-day operations. He's still taking private jets, playing golf, smoking cigars, gambling, and enjoying the best life you can possibly have. It did catch me a little bit off guard, though, that he was selling the team, because it's certainly not for financial purposes.
And it says that MJ would be staying on, their early reports, as still a minority owner within the franchise. So his stake obviously would grow less, but he's not completely getting out of the Charlotte Hornets business. I don't know if there's an... I do wonder a little bit if there's an idea in that organization that MJ stinks at this and he needs to take less of a role. And I know that that's probably slander that you expect from me around Michael Jordan's name, but I mean, there aren't people out there that love Michael Jordan, the player, so much that they defend the whole way this has played out in Charlotte. I mean, they stink routinely. Yeah. Like, they're terrible, right? I mean, they're terrible right now. On a night-to-night basis, they're like the worst team in the NBA.
You know what's funny, Kevin, with Charlotte, too? The fan base, you say, oh, no, Michael, don't sell. Like, everything I see on Twitter here is like, thank goodness he's finally out. We can get our basketball team back. You never thought that would be the case. In Carolina with Michael Jordan? Jeez.
That perfect timeline of yours. We will round up the rest of the news from a Friday as we get set to preview all of the college basketball in hour number two.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
We close out hour number one with a quick mention of the World Baseball Classic. Hour two, we preview all 16 Friday games, plus a little pick six action for you as well. DRS yesterday ripped off a little 5-1 pick six there, Donnie, which we love to see for you.
Exactly. I mean, I expected 6-0, 5-1. Disappointment to the people out there. But today, another pick six
on
deck. I'm looking forward to getting after it. It was the Utah State over, I believe. Yeah, Utah State over ruined it for me. It's like 155 and a half.
A shame.
Come close there because the Mountain West stinks. But that's another story.
You know what? We'll call it a bad beat, though. The people are hating out there. But we'll make it happen here once again. Look, Edwin Diaz out for the season. The World Baseball Classic right now has people that are invested and people that, quite frankly, could not tell you a single result of the World Baseball Classic. Mm-hmm. Don and I fit the description of the latter. I don't really care. Which then makes something like this a little difficult to digest. Because I know there's plenty of people out there that are now saying, why is Edwin Diaz even there? For me, Donnie, I think that's completely unfair. I think when you have the opportunity to represent your country, if that's something that you want to do, I can absolutely never knock you for that. And also, Edwin Diaz's injury is as freak of an injury as you will see. Season-ending injury on a celebration. To me, this is not about, I can't believe he's at the World Baseball Classic. This is a heartbreaking situation for him, his teammates, within the country, and then, of course, the New York Mets.
Now, look, there's a couple ways to look at it. Baseball, I love it. Major League Baseball, I love it. baseball outside of Major League Baseball, I don't care. College World Series, who cares? It's boring. I'd rather take a nap than watch any of that. So getting back to the World Baseball Classic, I don't care about it. But I don't know how you have high-priced players mere days before the season starts playing in an exhibition somewhere to get hurt. And for the people out there, you can get hurt in your living room. You can get hurt riding a scooter or a bicycle. That doesn't matter. He got hurt playing baseball, not for the Mets, who pay him merely days before the season begins. It's idiotic that Major League Baseball even allows these players to be there.
Differing minds. Hour number two begins with a Friday breakdown for the college basketball slate.